Kathy, is Amy on with us yet?
She was. Yeah. Oh, no, she left.
Okay. So
she'll get back on with the host code. I mean, the guest code.
With the guest code? Okay. All right. Kathy, does it look like we have more people joining?
We have about 15. 20,
okay.
Maybe.
All right.
Some people are going to get on the recording this week because the invitation didn't go out until yesterday. Well, it went out a little bit before, but some of them didn't get it until recently. May not be aware of what day it was.
I see. So it went out a little bit late. Is that what you're saying, Rick?
Yeah, instead of Tuesday, it went out more like Thursday.
Okay. Well,
but these calls are really good. I think it's well organized this year. So everyone who gets on, these calls are going to be awesome. It's going to be worth it. You guys are going to love it.
Good. Okay. Well, you know what, Kathy? I hate to start too late, but I'm a little worried that we don't have Amy with us. Cause
Amy just got on, and I'm trying to figure out if I can unmute her individually.
Oh, okay. Because,
yes.
Amy, oh, good.
Okay.
Do you have the
Amy,
guest code, Amy?
She's unmuted. I think we're going to be fine.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, it is a little after 8 o'clock. Is that what you have? A little after 7 o'clock there in California?
That's what I've got.
Okay. Well, then let's go ahead and get started because we have a lot to cover today. First of all, I hope your summers went well. I hope you all loved and enjoyed your LEMI training this summer. I hope you all felt like you came away filled with lots of new ideas and a surge to do to have an opportunity to start the year anew. We're kind of excited for the new year ourselves. Every year kind of looks a little different for us, and this is going to be a fun year this year because we're going to have a lot of participation from all of our trainers, and you're going to have a chance to get to know all of our trainers fairly well. Today, we have two of our best trainers who will be leading the call, Kathy Mellor and Amy Bowler. And I want to just remind you all of something really quickly before we get started, that, LEMI is a mentor training company, and some people say, well, what does that mean? What is training? What do we have to have training for? And, I just want to help you all understand, kind of get a little bit of vision of that. Kathy and Amy are going to spend time this today talking about getting a bigger vision for LEMI and for your community. Let me just put a little plug in there. Training is really usually for a certain kind of methodology or some kind of a specific way you want something to happen. And in fact, I've been at a seminar this weekend with one of my best friends, Nicolene Peck, who has a really fabulous parenting program called Teaching Self-Government. And that's what she does with parents, is she trains them in this specific system or the specific methodology that she uses for parenting. And it really does require a lot of training because it requires a lot of practice. And so in addition to the knowledge that you're getting or the education you're getting, we want you to get training. So these next few months as we go through the conference calls, I want you to think of this is continued training for you, and they're going to go more into getting a bigger vision for all of that and why we want to really continue our training. But we hope to keep you inspired this year so that your classrooms and your mentoring is all better and more heightened, and you have a stronger vision, and you have a really strong direction so that you can get the results out of your classroom and out of your mentoring that you really want to get. And just remember to take advantage of the mentor, the class it calls that you will have access to. And I'm going, if you all will get a piece of paper and pencil really quickly, I want you to write this down, because I want you all to remember to take advantage of this. Go to lendingmentortraining.com, so www.lendingmentortraining.com. And then go to the tab, one of the tabs at the top says mentors. Has a little, it has a couple words on it, but it says it'll say mentors. And then open up that tab and then scroll down to where it says mentor materials. And click on that, and then you can put in your special code. The username is mentor, and the password is materials. That is going to give you access to the classic calls or the calls in the past. And we try to record every call that we do so that if you feel like you're missing a piece somewhere, go back into those calls and look to see what perhaps you might be missing. You know, Amy and Kathy have a wonderful presentation for us today to just help us get a bigger vision. Remember, it's part of the diagnostic tool, vision, mission, ability, skills, and knowledge, and that's what we're going to really focus on today. So, I just wanted to make sure that you had remembered that you had access to those, and just remembering, remember, get your piece of paper and pencil out if you don't have it right now. The second Saturday of every month, we will be on the call with you, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May. And put that in your calendars so that you are bright and early, ready to get up on those Saturday mornings and get those calls, because it's going to make the difference for you in your training, in your mentoring. So with that said, thank you for letting me have the time to make those announcements. I want to introduce Kathy and Amy. Kathy and Amy, are you on right now?
Yes.
Awesome. So Kathy Malore is a personal trainer, personal mentor. She also has a company called Unleashing Your Voice. And she does debate and speech training throughout the whole country. She is a well-known speaker. She's very articulate and really does travel a lot. I can't believe how busy her summer was. With all the things she did, she married off a kid and didn't one of your kids go on a mission?
He came back from a mission.
That's what it was. So super busy summer. And she homeschools, of course, and she is she has a lot of experience in at Lemmy. She's been with Lemmy almost from the very beginning. One of our favorite mentees as we were mentoring her, and she's always been super on top of it. The thing that I have so much respect for about Kathy is that, you know, she's very intelligent and has a wonderful background in education, and she was probably one of the very best students of Lemmy. She took our mentoring and she took the training, and she didn't look back. There was no pride there. She took it and she went. And that's what actually makes her such a great trainer, because she knows how to be mentored. I want to introduce Amy for a minute. Amy is super well-versed in all of our Lemmy projects. She, too, has done the exact same thing as Kathy, really been humble and taken the trainings and really work hard to understand the concepts, and she's just jumped in with both feet. Amy helped Tiffy and I write the Edison Project, which was such a delight for us because we spent hours working with her, and she's such a hard worker. I just remember when we were working on the Edison Project, and she was on vacation on the East Coast, and we were, you know, in a different time zone. And, you know, I'm kind of a late night worker. I'm working at 11 o'clock at night. I think I was working like at 11 or 12 o'clock at night, and there was Amy still working on the project with me. I'm sure it was 2 o'clock in the morning there. I'm a super hard worker, and Amy is always surprising. She has many children. And every time I turn around, she's thinking about having another one. So it's very surprising to me. Kathy lives in San Diego, and Amy lives in St. George, Utah. And with that introduction, please begin, ladies.
Thanks, Anality.
We are so glad to be here today with you, and we just wish that we could see your beautiful faces. But maybe you don't wish that if you're still in your pajamas, so that's the nice thing, that we can't see you. Well, we wanted to talk for a minute. The school year starting, and if you're like me and you can just kind of feel it in the air, St. George, you don't feel the fall in the air yet. It'll be a couple months for that. But we can feel the excitement of school. And as I've gotten on Facebook, I've seen some cute pictures of kids off to school, first day of school, first day of third grade, those kinds of fun pictures. And I ran across a fun picture the other day of my brother and his wife and their kids. Their youngest is just starting first grade, and so he's so they were, you know, taking a cute picture, hugging him, bye-bye, first day. And then off he goes to school, and then the next Facebook post is my brother, who's a pilot and has some days off during the week, and his wife taking a selfie at the movie theater, and so happy and so cute, and I just love their picture. And as I was looking at that, I was just thinking, and I couldn't help but ask myself, what would that be like? I just really couldn't imagine it, because that wasn't the kind of experience I was having in my life.
So the deal is that we didn't choose that life. You know, we didn't choose the life that meant we're going to have all day to ourselves and, you know, pursuing just whatever we felt like doing. We chose a different life. We chose to take on our education of our family, really, not just ourselves, not just our kids, but ourselves as well. And we didn't choose the go to the movie and the matinee life. We didn't choose that, right? And so,
yeah.
Those momentary, I don't know, feelings of regret or whatever when you see people's, you know, exuberant posts of sending off their kids. It's just, you have to remember that it's not what you chose. So we chose the harder path, the path of the mentor. And today, Amy and I are going to share with you the LEMMY continuum and focus on the vision, mission, abilities, skills, and knowledge that they build in you, in your children, in the youth that you work with, and in your communities. And that's what we chose.
It's so true, Kathy. Thanks. Thanks for the reminder. I think we all need mentors and friends to help us remember. okay, I want you to take your piece of paper, because I know you have paper and pencil, and I want you to get a new piece of paper if you've already written a few notes on one side, because you've got the great information that Anality told you. Get a new piece of paper, and I want you to draw a line down the middle. And this line is actually going to be a pendulum. We're going to use this pendulum throughout our talk this morning, that so your line is a pendulum, and the very bottom is like a heavy, heavy ball, a metal object that's tied onto that string, and that pendulum is swinging back and forth, left and right. And on the left-hand side, you're going to write the word submission at the top of your paper. And on the right-hand side, you're going to write the word initiative. These are two virtues that are developed throughout the scholar phase. Initiative, the ability to be proactive, to act. Submission, the ability to submit to a mentor, to do what someone else asks you to do because it's the right thing. There are a couple of key words that go with both of these. But first, I want to give you an example. I'm mentoring Sword of Freedom this year, and so I've been rereading Uncle Tom's Cabin. It's been about 10 years since I read it, and can't believe all that I've learned from it. But I want us to think about Uncle Tom, the main character in the book, and he has this incredible initiative. Think about that initiative side of our phases. With his initiative, he brings his Bible everywhere, and he's teaching no matter where he goes, even though he's a slave and he's forbidden to read and to even share basically anything that he knows. He takes initiative anyway, and he teaches wherever he goes. And one of my favorite parts in the book is when he's asked to kind of move up in station as a slave and to actually begin to discipline and whip and beat another slave for something that the slave has done. And he himself is a slave, and he stands up to his master and says, "I won't do it. I won't harm another person. It doesn't matter what you ask of me, I won't do it." And he doesn't back down. He says, I don't care what you do to me, but I will not hurt another person." And to me, that is like the ultimate initiative, because no one told him to do that. He just of his own knew that that's what he needed to do, was stand up and do what's right, and he went out and did it. But then he also shows this incredible submission. So you see on the other side is this submission, and he has a sense of duty to his master and to his family, but his best submission is to his God. And when he feels like he's supposed to submit to other people, he does it. When he has a chance to run away, he doesn't run away, because he knows that in that process his family would suffer. And if he might escape to freedom, but then his family would be punished. And even his master, who he loves, would suffer financially or personally. And so Uncle Tom has this great combination of this submission and initiative, and willing to be both sides. And that's really what we are trying to teach our students. We want them to learn both of these attributes as they go through the scholar phase. And we're going to see that there are, as we go through the different phases of the scholar phase, the different levels of the scholar phase, they're going to be tested in different ways. And the beginning one is the practice scholar phase, and that one is more strongly testing their initiative, testing their ability to go out and do something of their own will and their own decision. A couple of key words for initiative and submission. With initiative, one of the key phrase is "send me, I'll do it." And the submission, the key phrase is "thy will be done." Both really important attributes. So with this initiative, we're back over to the initiative side, and we're with practice scholar. That's the first part of the scholar phase, is a practice scholar phase. An initiative is not something that is very often celebrated or necessarily, especially in our education system, initiative isn't praised as much as submission. Follow what you're supposed to do. Do all of these assignments. Initiative is what are you going to choose to do? And it's really important that in Practice Scholar, our students have this freedom, this time to choose what they want to do. And we have developed these projects that make it possible for our students to be in this environment of freedom, to have, to be in this vacuum, so to speak, this space where they have a lot of free time. And then we put them in this class where we inspire them and put them around their peers, have an inspiring mentor, and it is a great class so that they want to choose to do these great things and to become something different and to use that initiative to do something great. But they don't have to choose it, and a lot of them won't choose it, or they might take an amount of time to choose it. So we just wanted to kind of go over the Practice Scholar projects that we have as part of LEMI and talk about those. In the first one that we want to talk about is Key of Liberty. In Key of Liberty, you learn about early American history, the Revolutionary War, the U.S. Constitution, principles of government, the founding of our nation. You look at questions like, what is freedom and why does it matter? What's more important, my family or my country?
And, you know, I think it's important to look at how we're growing in these scholar ladders, how the youth are climbing them to get to this place where they are educated. And if you have your training manual, you might want to not the manual, the packet that you got as a separate from your actual project. In there are the scholar ladders, and we're not going to be able to talk about everything on all of them, but in Key of Liberty, I think one of the most amazing things that happens is that they get an incredible boost to their vision. They begin to see a connection between education and greatness. And when they learn about John Adams, and they learn that story of when John Adams had told his father he wasn't interested in Latin and didn't want to learn it was too difficult, and he didn't want to go to school anymore. His father wisely, you know, said, okay, well, I need you to go dig a ditch for a new wall, and you don't have to go to school anymore. So after one day, he comes to his dad and says, yeah, so I'm interested in studying Latin again. And then they go on to see what John Adams accomplishes in his life. So that they get a sense that you can't, you know, that education is tied to being able to fulfill your greatness. And another skill that's strongly emphasized in Key of Liberty is memorization. I like to tell my kids that when you memorize the Declaration of Independence, you know, first of all, you're doing something that most adults have never done in their lives. But you're getting Thomas Jefferson's words in your head. This is not rote memorization of the date of this or the fact of that. We're not emphasizing, you know, being able to rotely repeat things. We're memorizing something that changed the world. We're memorizing something that came from one of the greatest pens that ever wrote. You know, so they have Thomas Jefferson in their brain, and I'm always telling them that. It's like, you've got Thomas Jefferson in your brain now. So that skill, you know, the vision of the education and the greatness and that skill of memorization is in, you know, both Key of Liberty and Shakespeare Conquest, as they memorize, you know, definitely the best pen ever. So.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Kathy. Yeah, these Practice Scholar projects are amazing, and they're set up with such a different format than most classes. We have these list of steps or or requirements, so to speak, that they can accomplish if they choose to, and then this great reward at the end, or maybe it's a party with our class, or maybe it's a field trip to an inspiring place for Sword of Freedom, where they study about the Civil War. It's an actual replica of a Civil War sword that you would be amazed what these students will do to receive one of those swords. A lot of external motivation so that to inspire them to do these hard things. And that's one of the things that we wanted to talk about today. In training, we in the philosophy training, wherever you got your training and whoever taught you that, there were the three R's that we learned. And the first R is there. Each of the R's is remember, and the first remember is to remember that the labor cycle is hard. We as mentors need to remember that. As I'm looking at fun Facebook posts and longing for maybe the fun, remembering that we got on this labor cycle and that it is hard, and that might not be something that we want to teach our young practice scholars. But to remember in our mind, and we're giving them a little glimpse of the hard and helping them see how they can feel a sense of accomplishment and actually have a good time and feel some joy in that process of doing these hard things. Shakespeare Conquest, as they immerse themselves in Shakespeare and play these great acting games that help them to figure out who they are. And then actually perform a play where they have to memorize Shakespeare's words, and just like Kathy was saying, have Shakespeare in their head and a part of them because they've memorized this. It's incredible to see who they become through that. Hero Project, another Practice Scholar project that we just started training this year. I'm teaching that with my husband next semester. We hero project, you learn about World War II era and discover who your heroes are and what's required of a hero generation. Amazing, amazing projects. The other thing to remember with these projects is that, and in our communities, is that it's not just for the youth. It's also for the adults. And most of us as adults didn't go through a scholar phase when we were youth, maybe partially, but most of us have some gaps, and so we're filling those in as we go, as we teach our children. And so we're on various levels of our scholar phase, and some of us are going to be in practice scholar phase, and that's great because we're beginning our educational journey. And a lot of times that might look like a gathering project class or a freedom project class. It might look like, in our Commonwealth School, it's a mom scholarship class that meets during the junior school. Maybe it looks like an adult being an assistant mentor in a scholar class. It's a great time to begin to learn those things.
And that reminds me of the second R, the second remember, which is that the scholar ladders are diagnostic tools. We can use those ladders to diagnose ourselves as we are trying to get through scholar phase. We can look and see, you know, where we have gaps and try to, you know, figure out how to fill them in. Like she said, it could look like being part of an adult education class, like the five pillar. And it could also look like being the mentor because you learn so much along with them. It could also look like you need to find a mentor in that thing. So, but if you don't diagnose, if you don't ask the question, you're not necessarily going to find the answer. And the other component of that is that these scholar ladders are diagnostic tools in your classroom. If you're on this call, you are probably mentoring a project. I know some people come to training just to keep growing themselves that most of us are mentoring projects. And when you run into a roadblock in your classroom, you can ask yourself, is this a vision problem? Is this a mission problem? You know, is this an ability problem? Is this a skill problem? Is this a knowledge problem? Because then you can start to assess, you know, where should they be and what can I do to solve that problem. So the second R of our three remembers, the scholar ladders are diagnostic tools. It's a very, very valuable way to figure out what's missing, which then sparks your little creative mentor mind to find a solution to it. So just remember, we're gonna hit them all before the end. So did you want to
awesome.
Talk about Shakespeare Conquest and what that looks like?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, let's see. One of the cool things about Shakespeare Conquest, when they learn insights in human nature and themselves as they're studying and learning about these people and seeing the consequences of their action, it's awesome. I feel like I can't emphasize enough how important parents understanding us as parents, and even the parents of our students in our Commonwealth schools, understand the vision of what we're doing in these classes, and so that they can support what we're doing in the classroom at home and vice versa. I was thinking about my son, who's 13 and taking Sword of Freedom this year. So he's in his second year of Practice Scholar. And he knew for probably a month during the summer that Uncle Tom's Cabin was the first assigned book that we were going to be discussing in class. And then we didn't discuss it until the first 3 weeks. So we had a good 7 weeks to be reading the book. And he learns much better with audio. So we got him the audio book. And he began listening to it. But he didn't listen at all during the summer. About half an hour. He saved it all till 2 days before class begins. Because that's what my son likes to do, and that's what he's chosen to do.
And that's what Practice Scholar often looks like, so don't be in despair if you're seeing that in your classroom.
Yeah, and that is what's cool. In this case, I saw my son, you know, put on his headphones and kind of bury himself in his room with some Legos and other building materials, of course, so that he can listen to Uncle Tom's Cabin and know when his brother and sister interrupt him. I can't play. I'm listening to my book. And so he's listening hours, a day and a half of listening. And I thought I was just impressed with his initiative. I don't know that he would have done that a year ago in his first year of Practice Scholar. But then I also overheard this conversation with his 7-year-old sister. He was upstairs, so our son was upstairs just kind of taking a little break, and he was reading one of his sister's Amelia Bedelia books that he actually particularly likes. And he just kind of hanging out on the couch, which is another place I often find my Practice Scholars when they're in that vacuum. Sometimes they just need to chill out and veg. And I try to let them do that. Sometimes I have to, I have a good friend who says, just put the duct tape on the counter so that you can put it over your mouth and not interfere with their freedom. But my little daughter came up to him and said, hey, aren't you supposed to be reading your book? Don't you have to read that book by Wednesday? Why are you reading this Amelia Bedelia book? That's my book. And he kind of got a little irritated with her, and he was like, hey, it's my choice. I'm a scholar. I can choose what I want to do with my time. And she's like, okay. But I was really glad that he had that sense. He knew that it was his choice. And so when he went back down to his room and put his headphones on and listened to his book, it was his choice. It wasn't me saying, you really got to do this. You're going to run out of time. Aren't you worried about this? What's going to happen? What if you don't finish? What if you're the only guy in the class that doesn't finish? How are you going to have a discussion? Oh, no. What about next year? What about getting into college? Ah! that doesn't mean I haven't ever felt that way or even said those words to my poor children.
Right.
But I try to say them to my husband.
We all slip into that conveyor belt mentality occasionally.
Yes. Yes. So, that's kind of all I had for Practice Scholar, Kathy. If you have anything to add.
Let me just talk a little bit more about the Scholar Ladders. I know a lot of our mentors are doing Practice Scholar, so we want to make sure that, you know, this is clear for you. So we talked about vision with Key of Liberty, and in Shakespeare, I'd like to talk a little bit about mission and abilities and knowledge. So the wonderful, you know, mission-oriented thing that Shakespeare Conquest does is, you know, it says, I can do hard things and I have a role to play. And obviously that fits perfectly with Shakespeare Conquest because you're putting on this production, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you really don't, I don't know, maybe the other people feel differently, but I taught Shakespeare Conquest. That was the first project that I taught, and it was a long, long time ago in the very beginnings of our Commonwealth. And I remember just going, they will never be able to do this. I mean, I was never saying that out loud, but I thought they will never be able to understand and repeat all these lines. You know, it'll just never happen. I thought it was just doomed to failure. I mean, I have to admit that. I just didn't think I could do it. I didn't think they could do it. It just seemed impossible, you know? So I was kind of in the state of, like, let's just work really hard and see what we can do. And, you know, we had, oh, my gosh, I can't remember the play right now because I should have thought of this earlier, but we had four leads, and they were 11, 12, and two 13-year-olds. And, yeah, it just seemed impossible that they'd pull it off, but they were amazing. I mean, they totally pulled it off. And one of the things I remember is one of the moms came to me, and it was kind of during the tech week, you know, every single day rehearsal thing, and she was like, I have to tell you what my son said. And she goes, he says to me, Mom, our play is so funny, but you're not going to get it. he realized that he had, you know, he understood the language of Shakespeare because he had done the hard thing, right? He'd memorized, he'd watched the plays, and that, you know, his mother was just hopelessly lost on the case. So anyway, they realized that they can do this hard thing, and in the case of me and my growth, I realized that they could do it too. And this was when Napoleon Dynamite was all the rage, and all these other teens I knew were quoting Napoleon Dynamite, and my students were quoting Shakespeare, and I was just like, yes, they can do hard things, and they do have a role to play. So it was an amazing sense of, you know, growth in that mission, that idea that they can do this thing that seems impossible. And one of the abilities in Shakespeare Conquest and the scholarship ladders are that I'm feeling more comfortable with my own body, space, and others. So some kids are kind of natural actors. They love to be the center of attention. They love to be up there. This is, you know, this is just where they shine, and that's great. They're growing also. But I wanted to tell the story of my second son. He wasn't one of those people and doesn't like to be up in front of people and doesn't like to be the center of attention ever. And he was in his second year of Shakespeare with a mentor that, you know, just really worked hard to bring out the best in all of her students. And he had this tiny little part. He was a guard, and he had one line or maybe two lines. I mean, it was just very, very minimal in terms of the, you know, overall moving forward of the plot. But she had worked with him over and over again to get him to cheat front so that when he gave his line to his buddy, that he would turn his body towards the audience and offer this line, you know, to them instead of, it's easier to do it to your buddy, right? To just forget that the audience is there. And after it was over, his mentor came rushing over to me and she's like, he did it. He cheated front. And I was like,
oh my gosh, this was like a big deal to her, and it was a big deal to him because he didn't want to cheat front. And I talked to him afterwards, and I said, you know, your mentor came up to me, and she was so proud of you, and she, you know, was so excited that you were able to cheat front when you offered your line. And he just, and this makes me want to cry, he just says, she loves me so much.
Aww.
And so, you know, this coming out of themselves and doing something that seems impossible is an amazing ability. I feel more comfortable with my own body, space, and others. I mean, there was like a concrete example of you know, growth in that particular ability. You know, as I said, the skills in Shakespeare Conquest also, you know, that memorization, wow, some of these kids memorize hundreds of lines, and it's not easy stuff because it's in iambic pentameter, and it's difficult words and archaic phrasing. But in both Shakespeare Conquest and, well, actually, and the Hero Project and Sword of Freedom, we really get a great body of knowledge. So that knowledge ladder is being, you know, climbed also. They're getting cultural literacy. They're getting references to things that refer to a Shakespeare plot or that talk about, you know, something having to do with history. They know what World War II is and what it means and the sacrifices that were made. And it gives them, I think when they study these pivotal moments, you know, the Civil War is a pivotal moment in our country. When they get that, it helps them to become politically centered, you know, that they start to see that there's principles behind a political view or ideology. So all of the scholarship ladders are happening throughout the projects, but we wanted to, you know, emphasize a couple of things just so you could see what that actually looks like. Because I know the first couple times I came to Lemmy Training, the scholar ladders were like kind of a mystery to me. But now I really, you know, want you to see that they are diagnostic tools that you can figure out what's going on in your classroom and in the lives of your children as you use them to see where they are and where they're climbing. All right, so why don't we move on to apprentice scholar? So this, I have to tell you, is just my favorite phase, scholar phase. And in apprentice scholar, we have a couple of different projects. But remember, when we get back to that pendulum that Amy had you draw, we're swinging now from initiative, you know, do this and get the reward, you know, to choose to buy in, choose to do these inspirements. We're moving over to submission, and submission is different than defeat. Okay, a lot of people have trouble with the word submission because they feel that they are, I don't know, giving up their freedom. Okay, I would say that in my, you know, conveyor belt education experience, that I was submitting to a system, but it wasn't giving up my will. It was just, this is what had to be done. And so there's a difference. When we move our scholars to submission, we are trying to help them use the initiative that they gained in practice scholar to then choose to submit. So it's different than knowing that the system is bigger than you are or the mentor is bigger than you are. And I don't mean that physically. I just mean, you know, that the mentor has more power than you do. So we're helping them to use that initiative that they grew in their practice scholar phase to choose to submit and to choose to learn how to do that in their youth, instead of, they're like me, they're 40 years old before they figure out submitting to a mentor. So that pendulum swings over to initiative, and a lot more is expected of them. But we can't forget that expectation comes with our responsibility to cast vision for why they should submit, why this project will help change their life for the better. So one of the first the first project that most apprentice scholars take is Pyramid Project. And this is our transition project. So if they're still, sort of practice scholar-ish, this is a good project to help them transition into that. The first semester is geared more towards that practice scholar move, transitioning them, and then the second semester is more of the apprentice scholar. But in that, they're learning amazing and important things. The four corners of the pyramid, the reason why it's called Pyramid Project, are these four basic and life-changing things to learn. One is learning how to seek and identify truth. One is developing the habits of a scientist so that we can not necessarily work in a lab for the rest of our lives, but use the IntelliGrow method to solve problems. We're scientists every time we solve problems. The third one is logic, and the fourth one is Newtonian math. Learning to use the symbolism of math, which is really what Newtonian math is, using the symbolism of math to be a better thinker. So it's engaging all of these different, corners of the pyramid to help grow them in their ability to think. So it's a fantastic project for that.
When I think about Pyramid Project, Kathy, I think of that vision that you have, that you gain with Pyramid Project, of those four things that you're talking about, but specifically the truth, that they get this huge vision that God is the source of truth, and that I can find out what that truth is, and by applying those truths, I can change the world. That's a new vision.
Absolutely. Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. The Georgix project, which this is the first year that it's been a standalone project for our Commonwealth schools, it's really about learning how to be tied to the land and how to be self-sufficient so that, you can survive whatever circumstances that you're in, and that the quality of your life, will be improved through having those skills. In that project, they learn the seven Georgic principles and the five mini-ags, and each one of those are key skills and abilities that will bless their lives for the rest, throughout their lives. And, if you take one like being able to self-validate, how many adults do you know that haven't developed the ability to see value in themselves? I mean, It's a problem, right? I think there would be much less demand for therapy if there were people who knew how to self-validate. So this is a great project for helping them to become the kind of person who is self-reliant enough to be of service to others. It's not based on just, it's all about me. It's really about community and being able to, to bless other people's lives as well. So we're excited to have the DeMilles on board with Lemmy and all their genius in bringing that Georgix project to light. And then the final apprentice scholar projects are Quest 1 and 2, which is a one-year project, and Quest 3, which is a one-semester project, and I'm going to talk about each one of those a little bit, just to give you an idea if you're still working in Practice Scholar, give you a vision of where you're going with that into the Apprentice Scholar phase. So Quest 1 and 2 is really all about learning what it looks like to be a statesman. The first semester, they study six people who changed the world, and they read their documents, their original words. They learn to write persuasively and to prove their point. And in that, they get to see what does it look like to be a statesman. And then second semester, they're finding statesmen in their everyday lives and in current, you know, people who are currently doing things and changing the world, as well as looking for ones through history. So they've developed the ability to see what a statesman looks like. And in the process of that, they are doing a project that helps them sort of hone in on their mission. We call it finding your voice, and using the principles in Stephen Covey's Eighth Habit, being able to find your voice or your mission and help others find theirs. So we teach them those principles. We have them pick a project to do research on and some kind of an application project. So I'll just share one that my oldest daughter did. She was interested in the self-esteem of girls, teenage girls, specifically young women. And so she did a research project where she, you know, learned all about what some of the causes of young women losing their self-esteem and turning to things like anorexia or bulimia or self-inflicted, you know, pains and addictions and those kinds of things. So she did the research on that, wrote a 10-page paper, and got really versed in it. And then for her project, she wrote a song. Excuse me. She wrote and recorded a song that addressed the real beauty of a person. So that gave her the opportunity to take what she'd learned and to apply it to a real life problem. So Quest 3 is, I'm not going to lie, the best project, my personal favorite. in that project, we're learning all kinds of governing. We're learning government on every level. Okay, they're going deep into 7 habits of highly effective people. They're journaling it, they're applying it, they're discussing it, and they're making those habits their own. They're also learning government in terms of the larger, you know, the government, right? They learn about the Supreme Court. They read landmark cases of the Supreme Court, and then they argue 2 of them. They have 2 practice and a final simulation where they argue 2 different cases. They get that jurisprudence under their belt. I mean, we have attorneys come in for the second simulation, and it's very high pressure. It's what I call a crucible experience, and every time the attorneys, when they're debriefing them, they say stuff like, I wasn't doing this kind of thing until my 3rd year in law school, or I wish I had done this when I was your age because it would have made my law school experience so much better. So they're really doing something extremely hard and being validated in it. They're also learning the 28 principles of good government that are in the 5,000-year leap. They're memorizing those. They're applying them to current events, and they're able to see, you know, we'll evaluate, are these principles something that can help the world? And if so, you know, how will I vote? How will I apply these principles to my adult life? Because most of the kids who are doing this are, you know, 16 or older. So they're becoming a better statesman because they have more tools under their belt. And the final thing I was going to talk about in that project is that they study worldviews. And I have to say that when I studied worldviews with my first class, that it was such a boost to my ability to think, because I was now able to see things through these different lenses of some of the major worldviews, and to be able to evaluate why people are and think the way that they think. Because it's very easy to understand people who are, you know, in your same worldview, but it's a little harder, to be able to get the worldview of other people down if you don't know what they are, if you don't know what worldviews are. So that's really very eye-opening and helps us to see how we can build bridges and how we can be able to affect change on all levels of government, from themselves up to the federal level. So, Amy, do you want to talk about some of the...
Okay. Yes, those are incredible. Kathy, thanks for giving us an overview of those. So, yeah, once again, let's go back to the scholarship letters, the vision, mission, abilities, skills, and knowledge. We talked about the vision with Pyramid Project, and with mission in Apprentice Scholar, the overall mission is that now is the time for me to prepare for my mission. They start to see, and you really see that in Quest 1 and 2, as they are not just studying other statesmen, but actually choosing how they can implement a characteristic of a statesman in their life. So how do I have courage? How could I become more courageous like Joan of Arc? How can I inspire others to greatness like George Washington? And they begin to gain a sense that, oh, I actually feel drawn toward this, and I have a gift for this, and this is part of my mission. I think even in Georgics, they learn that I have something unique to offer the world. Those are mission things. And then going on to the next with abilities, there's so many abilities that they learn in all the projects. Specifically, let's look at Pyramid Project. They gain the habits of a scientist and know how to be a homesteader. I love that word homesteader, and think about the early pioneers in our country who were given the opportunity to have land if they would only cultivate it. They needed to leave their homes and come out to this wilderness. Think about Little House on the Prairie, homesteaders, and develop, cultivate, build something up. That's an ability to not just rely on other people to do everything for you, but to be a creator and a builder in your own right. And that's something that they start to develop in Pyramid Project. I think about one of my sons was in Pyramid Project, and he was, they had to do an experiment. They have to do several experiments, but one of them they're supposed to display at the end of the semester. And so he got together with one of his buddies, and they decided that they were going to do it together. And a lot of our students, they learn better when they're in a group, or when they're with another person, and that's some of the power of these projects is that they're in a group situation, and if they learn better that way, they can grab a friend and do a project with them in some cases. So in Pyramid Project, they decided, okay, we're going to do this experiment together, and they decided they were going to make a hovercraft. I remember the first time they told me they're going to make a hovercraft. I tried not to laugh out loud. I might have let out a little small tooth. But I try to keep it in my head, the things I'm thinking, like, you're out of your mind, what are you thinking, you're going to make a hovercraft, that's crazy, this isn't rocket science, you know, you're 14. Anyway, they spent hours in our garage. I don't know, they were doing it, they were a little bit older, so I just let them go. The final thing, I remember vividly when it was out on our driveway, when they finally had this eureka moment of figuring out the balance between this large inner tube, one boy in the inner tube holding the leaf blower, like the lawn leaf blower, between his legs at just the right level, so that you turn that on and it actually lifted him up and he moved. And wow. The whole family came gathering down and was like, ah! He's a hovercraft. Oh. Now, you know, 1 inch to the left and comes crashing down. That lawn blower had to be specifically situated just right, but they got it. It was so cool. That's an ability to create something out of nothing. Then the skills, they learned so many skills in these projects. Some familiar phrases that we use in Quest 1, 2, and 3, that they will learn how to read like a lawyer, write like an author, think like a philosopher, speak like an orator. Those, and we tell our students that all the time, that they're going to be able to do those things by the end. And it's true. It is, it's really true. When they are there in the courtroom finishing their closing statements to that at that Supreme Court simulation, and they have those lawyers who've just interrogated them, and some of them to the verge of tears because it's so difficult, they know they've done it, and they really have gained amazing skills. Knowledge, I think Kathy's touched on those things when they've, everything that they are learning in each of those projects, it's incredible. Breadth and depth of knowledge that is not typical of 15, 16-year-olds.
Or adults, for that matter. Most adults have not studied worldviews. Most adults do not know, like, the real impact of the Supreme Court and why it matters, you know, how it affects our
yes.
everyday life. But, boy, these kids do. You know,
yeah.
they walk away from that experience or those experiences really
yeah.
understanding how government works and how they get impacted.
Yeah. Oh, it's so true. Yeah, it's incredible knowledge. And back to that Supreme Court simulation, when they're working together with their peers on a team, having to write a paper with a team, I think my husband had to do that when he was in MBA school, and they gave him so many cautions. They kept telling him, well, you're not going to be able to work this semester because you're going to be working on a team. You're going to make sure you have to clear your schedule so you can work together with your team. They made, you know, such a big thing of it, and these students are learning it at such a young age. It's difficult. It is difficult to work together with a team that you didn't choose, and to have to maybe argue for something that you don't agree with or believe in, and start to understand another perspective. Really,
yeah,
really
great,
powerful.
Great thinking opportunity
yeah.
for sure, and collaborating,
yeah.
absolutely.
Yeah.
And we probably don't want to leave a Apprentice Scholar without mentioning that, you know, we do have the five-pillar class for the adults to have a similar experience. Five-pillar is a lot like Quest 1 and 2. And 3, because there's worldviews in that as well. And, you know, if you don't have it in your community, come to LCS training next year and lead it, you know, if you don't have it yet in your community.
Yes, it's an incredible project. And it's exciting to see parents, adults going through this Apprentice Scholar phase and gaining these skills and abilities that builds on the Practice Scholar. Awesome. And really, our Commonwealth schools themselves are scholar projects for us as adults, as we're learning how to govern ourselves and apply principles of freedom and governance to our own community. As adults, we are actually living these projects. And I think that really transitions to the next pendulum swing, which swings us over back to, as we leave Apprentice Scholar, we swing back to the initiative side. And the next part of Scholar phase is the self-directed Scholar phase. And when we talk about these swings back and forth, the swings don't always nicely occur on July 1st every summer as they...
Wouldn't it be nice if they did, though?
It would be so nice, especially if each student in your class would just transition at the exact same time. it's organic.
Not the real life that we chose.
No, that's right. Thank you for the reminder.
Right.
Yeah, they're going to transition gradually, and as you're choosing where your own children, what classes will help them move through the Scholar phase next. You're using these scholarship ladders as diagnostic tools to help you see where are their gaps. Have they really learned how to be a homesteader? Have they really learned the skills and knowledge that they're going to need to move over into this self-directed phase? And actually, this is one of my favorite transitional points. because it's so full of energy. I think about a rodeo when you have the bull behind the pen and he's just waiting. I think they have to get them angry so that they'll be bucking for the bronco. Sorry, I'm not a big rodeo person, but I've seen it. So I think it happens with both the bull and the bronco. So they're behind this cage gate, and as soon as you open up that gate, they just blast out and they're running and kicking and fast and furious and lots of energy. And to me, that's kind of what happens at the end of this apprentice scholar phase. If they've had this awesome apprentice scholar phase, they've learned how to submit to a mentor and do a lot of really amazing and really hard things. But they've also, toward the end, they started to realize that there are a lot of things that they want to study, but they haven't had time. I have had students tell me they have had a stack of books 10, 20 high next to their bed, that they are just waiting to get to read and study until Quest 3 is finished because they're so busy doing their apprentice scholar things. But when they are ready to transition to self-directed scholar, you can just see it and you can feel it. And it's all you can do to hold them back and say, hang on, finish your Supreme Court brief. There's going to be a time for it. You're going to be able to do it. Don't worry. You're going to have 10 hours a day to practice your piano. It's all right. It's coming. It's coming. And then when you're able to open that gate and let them into self-directed scholar, you know, they let themselves into it. But you're helping lead them to what that is. Instead of our culture says, you finish this one great project, now go to another highly mentored situation where you don't have a lot of time to choose what it is you're studying and how you're going to study it. Instead, we're saying, no, go and do it and become who you want to be right now. You don't have to wait until you're 25 years old. Go and do it right now, this year. What are you going to do? And that is what the Edison Project is about. And I'm really passionate about that because I've had the chance to teach it for the past, I think, 4 or 5 years in a lot of different classes and a lot of different situations. So I want to give you an overview of what the Edison Project is, probably a little more in depth than our other projects because it's fairly new, and also because this idea of a self-directed scholar phase is probably the most underutilized in our culture, in our society. It's not something that we see. We might see parents allow their children to have freedom at 11, 12, maybe even 13, because it looks similar to a practice scholar phase. But now they're 16 and 17, and you're going to let them have a year, year and a half to choose what they want to do? What if they don't want to do anything significant? What if they choose to sit on the couch? They're 17. They can't do that. A lot of times so I think with our society, that they're not given that freedom. It's not a choice, because what if they fail? What if they choose something that I don't like? And that's one of the powers of the Edison Project, is that we have this incredible structure and framework to help them accomplish amazing things with their initiative, with their freedom. So we're letting them be in charge of the project, but we're guiding them along so that it's not a sit-on-the-couch situation, and so that we continue to inspire them to use these amazing skills and abilities that they've learned for the past 3-4 years, and, well, really their whole life, and start implementing them into a project that they create. So really, the Edison Project is twofold. The first part is helping them to create a project, and I'll give you some examples of some projects that students have created. And it's not just kind of like a 1 week choose what you want to do. It's a 5 to 6 week process where we take them through reading some inspiring books and studying about other amazing people who have done great things. I really like to study about William Kamkwamba, who was an African young man who saw a need in his community and saw that they didn't have electricity, and he saw in a library book a picture of a windmill. And from that picture and a few descriptions in that children's library book, he was able to build a windmill and that actually worked and generated electricity for his community using a bicycle and all kinds of random parts he found. Those are the kind of people that we study in the first 6 weeks of creating a project, going on vision quests, helping them see. This doesn't mean they're figuring out what's their mission for their whole life. We're saying, just look at this coming year. What is it that you want to do this year? And a lot of students come into it with a super, super strong idea of what they want to do. They already know, because those are probably the kids who had that stack of 20 books next to their bed, or they're just itching to have more time to build their computer or build something in their backyard or whatever it is that their skills and abilities are. But other students need a little more help in creating and knowing what it is they want to do for this coming year. So that that first part is helping them to create a project. And we have a lot of tools for them in which they actually go through. They write out, what's the vision I want to gain this year? What's the mission that I see for myself? What abilities do I want to gain? What skills do I want to gain? What knowledge do I want to gain? And then they go back through and say, I want to gain those things. How am I going to get them? What's going to be the best way for me to gain the ability to understand people better, to be able to work with them better? That's really an ability that I want to gain this year. So we're helping them to go back to the core and the reasons why. One of the things I love about this Edison project is that it's really helping them for their adult lives. It's helping them to create projects for the rest of their life. All of us do it. All of us as adults create projects. We may not know that we're doing it, but we do it all the time. Maybe as a mom, I know in this coming year, my baby's sleeping through the night, and so he is going to go to bed at 8 o'clock at night. I might actually have a couple hours of free time every evening, which equates to 6 hours during my week. What am I going to do with that 6 hours? That, and in that question, that's the beginnings of creating a project and deciding what it is I'm supposed to do with those 6 hours and how I want to implement, create a project, and what it is that I'm supposed to be doing in the next 6, 8, 12 months. And so we're equipping our amazing scholars with these skills and abilities to be able to create a project basically out of nothing, out of their own ideas, their own desires, their own visions. So that's the first component, the first part of the project. And the second part is helping them, giving them tools and structures so that they can stay motivated to actually implement their project, to follow through with the things that they so strongly desired to do at the beginning of the semester. So after that first 6 weeks, then we help them to set monthly goals and then smaller incremental goals to accomplish. What's the next step? So you have this, and we have a lot of examples, and we have a lot of things in place. So they actually come to class every week. But different from the other classes, after that first part, in their second part, as they're implementing their project and they come to class, they don't come to discuss a book that we have given them to read. They come to share what they've accomplished about their project. And they come to uplift each other as peers and to even share some of the struggles they've had. I really wanted to get in, you know, 6 hours of studying trigonometry this week, but I got waylaid, and my mom asked me to do this, and then I got kind of stuck doing, reading this other book, and it's so good, and I kind of forgot that I wanted to do this trigonometry, and I'm kind of mad at myself, and now then their peers will say, hey, it's all right, we do that, what can you do next week, what is it, do you need a set time to do trigonometry, what is it, can you let your mom know that, you know, 3 o'clock is your trigonometry time, and you really need help sticking to that goal. They're just brainstorming. They're learning how to actually mentor and help each other. And we teach them those skills. So they come to class. They come to class to be accountable. They actually fill out a weekly self-evaluation that they don't turn to anyone because it's a self-evaluation. But they're learning the skills of looking at their week. How did I do compared to what I could have done? Did I waste a lot of time, or was I wisely using my time? So they come and they come to class and they share informally, and then they have a chance to do some formal presentations. We don't have them spend a lot of time on these presentations like they might in Quest, because we want them to be focusing on their project, but they just might share something about what they've been doing with their project. And it really inspires each other as they see somebody else who spent, 80 hours this week building a computer from scratch or learning a new computer programming language and see their passion about it. It inspires them to do what they care about. And then they have a chance to do some formal peer mentoring. We pair them up, but sometimes they're in trios, and they actually have forms where they ask questions. What was a hard thing? What was a roadblock that you were up against this week? How did you overcome it, or how can I help you overcome it? They really some amazing tools to help them to implement the project. So they do all these things, and they also have a mentor. The Edison Project mentor is also there to help guide them, to help provide some accountability, to make sure that they're doing the peer mentoring, to do some really essential coaching to help them in those times when they're not sure if they want to keep pushing forward. They're feeling discouraged. We all know what that feels like as adults, and they're starting to feel some of this real-life adult discouragement and a little bit of lag in their motivation, helping them learn how to inspire themselves. What do you do when you're feeling that halfway through the week? How do you inspire yourself? There's not an external motivation in this project. It's all student-directed. The other part of our Edison Project class is that we don't want to just talk about our projects, but we also spend about half of our time having an amazing liberal arts discussion. And the framework for those liberal arts discussions are the 6 creative powers that Tiffany and Anility have given in their CDs now, but they were a year's worth of conference calls. And those are just incredible platforms for us to springboard off of and have these amazing discussions. We talk about things like personal power, relationship power, how do you influence another person, how do you learn from other people, authority power, material power, task power, how do you use your time, how do you be able to get more done in an hour. And then we share. A lot of times we'll watch a TED Talk together. We haven't read the same books. We're all doing totally different things. All the students are working really hard on different things, and so they're coming with these new perspectives and new insights and all different perspectives. Instead of having read the same book, we haven't. That's why sometimes we'll read it or watch a TED Talk during class, so that we can then discuss that idea that we watch together. And so we're having these amazing liberal arts discussions because it's in these discussions that we're able to have these aha moments and have the ability to go to the next level with our learning. And even though we aren't reading the same books and aren't doing the same things, we are able to help each other and bring each other to the next level. And these discussions are awesome. It's really one of the reasons why I love Edison Project so much is that I forget often that I'm the mentor in the class when we start having these discussions, because we're really beginning to join the conversation and the great debate and really asking real life questions that aren't solved and that no one knows the answer to, and we're starting to talk about what those answers are. So that's really an overview of Edison Project. Kathy, do you want to talk a little bit about?
Well, yeah, I want to talk about the V mask. You know, regarding this phase, I haven't actually taught Edison. It's the only project I'm lacking in my skill set. And
it's okay.
I have to say that
it's new.
Listening to you talk about it just makes me crave it. I want so badly.
You're gonna love it.
To do it. I have mentored a lot of individual youth through their self-directed phase. So I'm familiar with much of what you're talking about, but what I see as a very powerful, powerful component of the Edison Project is the peer mentoring and the discussion about, you know, great debate discussion. So hopefully other people on the call also, you know, felt that call of, I want to do that, because we want you to see the Levy Continuum as, you know, a journey and a destination, and Edison Project is the destination, and we as adults, we need to live mission also, right? We need to have be a co-creator and be able to change the world ourselves. And so obviously when we're mentoring this, we can implement those desires. So anyway, my vision, mission, skills, abilities, and knowledge is based on experiences that I've had in this phase, and not specifically to Edison Project. I just want to put that out there. But
it still applies, Kathy.
Yeah. I think the thing that vision that's created there is that they can now see their place in their ultimate mentor's mission. You know, if they look at the overarching purpose of life and they can see their place in it. With mission, you know, they're living it now. They actually are living mission because they're accomplishing the things that their mission entails. You know, it's not necessarily the complete fruition, but it is, you know, directly being, you know, that they're on the path, they're living mission. Their abilities include the ability to organize their life. They're strengthening that because in order to accomplish, you know, something amazing, they need to do that, which includes choosing between goods and, you know, in the good, better, best, being able to choose best. So how many adults struggle with too much on their plate because they can't seem to let go of something that's good, right? So they're having those abilities strengthened in a big, big way. And the skills that they're growing are specific to what it is that their mission needs. My daughter that just went off to college, she definitely spent her self-directed phase focusing on music and making that a super big priority, you know, in terms of having real performance opportunities, you know, being paid to perform, that kind of thing, and going deep in music theory and gaining those skills that, you know, she just had to get great mentors and and yeah, be self-directed. It's a crazy, crazy name for a crazy phase. And and the knowledge that they're growing, you know, it also is unique to their field. They're getting that they can find the information that they need to be successful. So self-directed, as Amy said, is an overlooked thing because we're so busy rushing on to the next thing, getting them in college or whatever. And, you know, I mean, that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying don't send your kids to college. Obviously, each one needs what they need. But sometimes I think we're in a hurry to move them on, you know, next thing, and having that sense of time to be able to grow in their own unique mission is just invaluable.
Thanks, Kathy. Those are great. It's really good to see how the scholarship letters apply. And I've been so amazed at the projects that I've seen these Edison Project students accomplish, doing all kinds of musical performance, preparing. A lot of them spend a lot of time preparing for college, maybe preparing for entrance exams. Maybe they're preparing for travel. Maybe they are traveling. Maybe they're going on humanitarian trips. A lot of them are preparing spiritually for church service. I've seen students start their own businesses and be successful and fail and be successful and learn those amazing, amazing skills of being an entrepreneur. I've seen students decide they want to run a marathon. And I'll never forget the day I was able to go and watch one of my students who her goal was to run this half marathon, and her dad decided that he would do it with her. And this is a huge accomplishment. And I was able to go and watch her. My family and I, we went and watched her. It was about 3 miles to the finish line. And we saw her, and just about then it started to rain. It's a pretty unusual in St. George. We're not used to running in the rain. But it was raining. It started raining and raining and raining. And when she came around the corner, 3 miles to go in this half marathon, and she was dragging. I don't know if you've ever seen runners or been a runner yourself, and you're like barely picking up the feet. That's what I saw in her face, and this anguish. And was she going to finish? Was she going to make it to the end? Those last 3 miles, so hard. And we just cheered our hearts out for her, just screaming at the top of our lungs, go, you can do it. And then we hopped in our car and drove the last 3 miles around to the finish line and got out there to cheer her, and just waiting, where is she, where is she, where is she? And then we saw her come up over this hill to come up to the final stretch, the finish line. She was there, and she was running, and she had the biggest smile on her face because she had done it. No, it wasn't easy. It was really, really hard, but she crossed that finish line and put her arms in the air, and I gave her a huge hug, and just being able to feel that feeling that she did it. She saw what she was supposed to do, a little bit of her mission to push herself. And I feel like that race kind of exemplifies what we do in Edison Project, is they create something and then we're there to cheer them on and help guide them and see where they're going with it, and to be there at the end to say, did it. Whatever it is that they did, and even in their failures, they learn so much. Incredible. And then as they go on to be adults, they take all these things that they've learned throughout the project, all of the years, the things they learn in Practice Scholar, testing their initiative, the things they learn in Apprentice Scholar, learning how to submit to a mentor that they know is the right mentor at the right time, and then swinging back to initiative again with self-directed scholar phase to be able to start living their mission into creating and becoming and doing those things that they've worked so hard to do. That's what scholar phase is about, and that's what our projects are about, and it's why we create our communities, so that we can have children and families who have the abilities and skills and desire to become great leaders in this amazing process.
Yeah, we've given you an overview of the LEMI continuum, and you know, hope it's been helpful for you to see kind of what the projects that you haven't trained for look like. Please remember that the LEMI continuum is a tool. Okay, it's a tool to help you bring youth and adults through the scholar phases. That's what we do at LEMI. We train mentors to be able to mentor the scholar phases and go through them themselves. But not only that, it's a proven tool. Okay, we've been doing this for about 15 years, and we've impacted thousands of people. You know, just this last year, we had almost 300 mentors come through. And I love to even just think about the fact that, you know, if each of those mentor 10 people, you know, this year, that's 3,000 people. You know, if it's 5 people, that's okay. If there's only 5 in your class, that's fine, because that's still 1,500 people. I mean, it's a lot of people. And yeah, as out of those thousands of people over the 15 years, we've grown communities like yours with shared vision, shared educational philosophy, and shared language. That's what makes a community, right? That's what binds us together and makes us more successful on this hard path that we've chosen. And you know, over the years, I've met hundreds of you. You know, hundreds of your youth, and I just can tell you that the outcome of these projects is nothing short of amazing. If I just talked about my own kids, it would be like, yeah, well, there's, you know, only 6 of them, and well, 2 of them haven't even gotten to scholar phase. But you know, it's not just my own kids that I see the benefits of the LEMI continuum. It's the kids in my community. It's the kids that I see when I'm out doing seminars. It's the kids that I see on Facebook that are your kids. You know, the kinds of things that they're doing are amazing because you are amazing. You know, our third remember is remember that your training lasts all year long. We'd like to encourage you to commit yourself to do the work that it takes to be a great mentor, to be the best possible mentor you can be. You know, choose to write your mentor reports, and don't forget to send them to registerlemi@gmail.com. We want, you know, to streamline that whole mentor report thing, and that's how we're doing it now. They're all being sent there, and then they're being sent to the particular trainer who's responsible to read and respond to them. You know, commit to attending these conference calls. As Rick says, they've come up with a great lineup of inspiring topics, and you will have times when those calls will make all the difference, help you hold on to the line, I know from personal experience. And, you know, consider getting cross-trained in multiple projects. I promise you that it will make all the difference in your growth and in your ability to find your own mission and accomplish it. And why do I know? I know because I did it. I know because I still need to go to Edison Project to be, you know, to be able to get even further in my own path. So, yeah, you chose a hard life. Remember the first R, the Liber cycle is hard. Okay, you've chosen a harder life, and as a result, you're not going to have the killer list of movies that you've watched during your kids' schooling. But you are going to have the satisfaction of watching your scholars change the world. You know, you may be woefully behind on the shopping you need to do and the cleaning of the house, but you'll be right on schedule with digging in deep in your own education, because the projects help us to do that. They give us a reason to be prepared every week. They give us a motivation to impact those amazing youth and adults that we work with. And maybe, you know, your mani-pedi will be way too infrequent, you know, way less than your neighbor down the street. But you're going to have mentor paydays.
Hey, look, I want you to know, those mani-pedis, I get them once a year, just so you know.
Just once a year, okay. Way to make time for it. That's great. But, you know, you're going to have these mentor paydays that come at you as you watch your scholars shine in your classes and as you watch them to choose to do really hard things. it far outweighs, you know, the shiny fingernails for sure. And so I'm not saying don't take care of yourself, but I am saying that in choosing this harder life, this one where your impact is daily and hourly and minute by minute, what you're doing matters, and it matters a lot, and freedom matters, and you're promoting it in what you're doing and in your involvement with Lemmy Projects is you know, boosting your ability to see freedom. So we encourage you to remember that your training lasts all year long. We're here to help and support you. We're vested in your success. We're vested in the success of your communities, and we want to inspire you to be the best possible mentors you can be.
Thank you so much, Kathy. You are so amazing. Thank you, Amy. Wow, what a great call. And I learned so much, and I actually had so much of my own inspiration. I've been taking notes, and Tiffany and I right now are kind of having our once yearly retreat, and she and I have been having the greatest time listening to you and just talking about everything that you're teaching, and so inspiring for us as leaders of the company to really see that the vision is getting cast, and we can step back and say, oh, wow, look how good they're doing. It's just incredible. Thank
That's
you so much.
That's what we learned at the feet of the masters.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to make sure I listen to this call again, because there's a couple of really key things that you said that I want to go back and kind of review. So the recording should be available by next week, and that link will be emailed out to you guys. So if you need to listen to it again, it's a classic call. So thank you very much, and we'll see you all again in a month.
All right. Thank you. We love you guys.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Do it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you later. Bye-bye.